More than 1,500 scientists descended on Baltimore for the 26th International Congress for Conservation Biology. But for the Eastern Shore, it is the world's largest estuary in the world, the Chesapeake Bay, that takes center stage. Recently, Environmental Protection Agency imposed what has been called a pollution diet to push measures that will help clean up the bay. Autumn Lynn Harrison is one of the organizers of the Congress and is also an Eastern Shore native growing up in Cambridge. She's a scientist and research associate at Clemson University. In addition, her grandfather was a waterman. So how would you assess the status of the bay?
You know, it's interesting for me because growing up as really a child of the 80s, I guess, you know, I didn't have striped bass, rockfish like my family did as a young child because there was a moratorium at the time. And so it's an interesting perspective. The Chesapeake Bay clearly still is struggling in many ways, but I have seen this real change in momentum of scientists, but also watermen, farmers in the Chesapeake Bay area to contribute their perspectives and science to improving the bay. So I think that although there's been a lot of effort, a lot of money, a lot of research that's already been done, and the Chesapeake Bay is still struggling quite a bit, what I'm positive about is that the people of the Chesapeake Bay region, our identity is so tied to the Chesapeake Bay. So I see a lot of encouraging movement forward. So currently still in a precarious state, but I'm positive about our progress.
What's the one area you think that really needs work when it comes to cleaning the bay?
I think that one of the things that we really tried to do with our symposium here at this conference was to create a stronger dialogue between stakeholders such as watermen and farmers and scientists. We have very common goals, and sometimes scientists and stakeholders and conservation organizations might differ about their perspectives about how to achieve them.
Now, a number of watermen have said that their efforts to make a living have been hampered a lot by the restrictions that have been placed on them over the years.
My perspective is an interesting one because I'm trained as a scientist, as an ecologist, but my heart really lies with the waterman community. My grandfather was a waterman on Tillman Island, and he pound net fished, he ran an oyster byboat, he crab potted, and so he really is typical of the waterman's struggle, and so my perspective is very balanced in this way. I think that the regulatory complexity of really running a successful operation on the bay makes it tough for local watermen. So one of the things that would really help would be just to simplify the regulations. Economist Lisa Wanger at the University of Maryland, she said, you know, a lot of the times we need to leave it to the people who are out on the bay every day to figure out how to solve some of these problems. Like, you know, we don't need to tell them how because they know the bay and they are creative. But the what, so what goals do we want to achieve? And then we can all work together for creative solutions to develop the how. And hopefully that will improve the regulatory structure so it's a bit more simple.
What do you say to the waterman who sees sections of the bay being roped off? And he says, look, you're taking my livelihood away.
You know, it's an interesting question. That is actually really a global debate, this movement forward of using sanctuaries and protected areas to help populations rebound. And I've also talked to watermen who see the use of this. And so I think that although the debate gets framed this way, I actually hear some positive outcomes of this, especially from the side of the oyster fishery. Watermen see that just there aren't the oysters there to even hand tong anymore in some cases.
How fast do you see the bay coming back? I mean, you had about 2 million bushels harvested for years annually, and that has significantly dropped.
The peak of the oyster fishery was really the late 1800s. So even by the 1920s and 30s, there was already a huge decline in the harvest. And that's when my grandfather was making a living. He was born in 1905. And so by the time that he was born, the oyster fishery's heyday had already come and gone. So this is a long process. Oysters do take a bit of time to come back. But to get to those 1800s levels, we're not going to get there very fast.
Autumn Lynn Harrison is one of the organizers of the 26th International Congress for Conservation Biology in Baltimore this week. This is Don Rush for Delmarva Public Radio.